everyone, and welcome back to the Research Talks podcast here from Stopbox with Alan Green and Dan Flynn. So yes, a very quiet week as predicted. Alan, anything coming across your screen? I don't think I have anything to report this week, apart from gold, actually. And Dan did point that out earlier in the week. Gold shot up, I think, 4% intraday at some point.
Yeah.
But that's the only thing that I think caught my eye.
Yeah, I think that's it. I mean, just in terms of the economy, Persimmon's lifted its 2026 home completion target, which is encouraging, so that there's obviously there's some nascent demand there, also Michael Page, the recruitment company, is doing very well in the USA and Asia. So clearly, the jobs markets is buoyant in both the USA and Asia, which reflects well on those economies, and of course that should have a feed over effect into the UK.
That's correct. And I did also read something as well about the concern about the AI and the layoffs that we were hearing over the past sort of few months is actually reversing a little bit as companies realize that actually it's not perhaps filling the gap that they needed exactly. And a lot of companies were recruiting again. So that ties into what you were saying.
And of course, we're seeing these. So AI is just built this new virus, hasn't it? Or a virus or antivirus.
Yes, that was this morning. Yeah. Yes, I saw that.
I mean, how scary is that? You know, if that technology exists, imagine getting into the wrong hands.
Indeed. Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. Alan, Dan, anything from your point of view?
No, like you say, it's been pretty quiet. It's good to hear that economic data that Alan was just saying. Gold's it gets up again today when we're recording. It's just crossed 4,300 an ounce. So
yeah,
it's nice to see that it's up. It was down a little bit yesterday, but it recovered during the day. And it's good to see it's up again. So it wasn't just a flash in the pan when it went up by four. Hopefully it's a bit of more of a sustained run, because we've seen a lot of the investment banks and, of course, Rick Rule talking about pretty lofty price targets for the end of the year and the end of the decade. So I'd like to see that actually start to play out. We've been sitting around waiting for it for a while now, haven't we? So, yeah, good. We'll see where we are next week, won't we, with regards to gold.
Yeah, exactly. It's interesting, though, isn't it? Imagine the balance sheets that some of these producers are sitting on, you know? That are producing at, you know, 1500, 1600 an ounce. You know, there's a lot of capital sat there. I think I was reading some analysis the other day, and you could actually buy, and these were big companies, like they were like Newmont, for example. You could buy Newmont today and get your money back in 11 years.
That's
not a bad deal if you've got billions or however much they're worth to buy them out.
I was going to say, worth tucking that away for the long term.
Exactly. Yeah, so it highlights undervaluation in the sector. Anyway, so, well, a gold explorer moving to development stage, of course, in Finland with Nordic Resources, Australian listed. I like this company quite a lot, actually. But Dan, you're going to talk to us about Nordic, and I think you've is there a newsletter this week about Nordic as well?
Yeah, that's right. I've done this week's newsletter on them, so I thought it'd be good to cover on here as well. Like you say, I mean, they're a company we've both spoken to before, Mark, and we've both discussed. It's a really strong offering. So, you know, we're drilling now, restarting in Finland. I thought this was a good time to properly introduce the story and cover it on the newsletter. So the simple version to me is Nordic already has a meaningful gold platform. It has three projects in central Finland. There's Kopsa, the Kamala Trend, and Hersikangas. And together, these projects host 34.3 million tons at 1.11 grams per ton gold equivalent for 1.23 million ounces of gold equivalent. So that includes just over 1 million ounces of contained gold and 38,000 tons of copper. So this isn't a company starting from nothing. And importantly, all three of those resources start from surface, which means they may be amenable to open pit mining. And you mentioned Finland. I think this location point is important as well, because Finland's a strong mining jurisdiction with proper infrastructure and established workforce and existing gold operations already in the country. I think it was actually voted the most, you know, the Fraser Institute Mining Attractive this index. I think it ranked number one last year. So, you know, it doesn't steal all the headlines, but it's quietly just becoming a real hotspot for gold exploration, just like much of the Nordic countries are. So Nordic's projects sit in the Middle Ostrobothnia gold belt, and they're all within roughly 70 kilometers of each other. So this isn't just a single project story. If Nordic keeps growing these deposits, there's a potential regional development angle here. And with two existing mills in the broader area, there may be more processing flexibility than you'd normally expect from a junior gold company moving forward. So that's good optionality for the future. So moving on to the project specifically, the flagship is Kopsa. Kopsa already hosts 814,800 ounces of gold equivalent at 1.09 grams per tonne. But the important thing is that Kopsa looks like it's still growing. Nordic's now completed 38 new or extended holes at the project for just over 9,600 metres. And those holes are not currently included in the resource I just mentioned, and that's key. A lot of the recent drilling has been outside the existing resource boundary, testing extensions to the north, the southeast, and also the southwest. And some of the results have been really strong. Just bear with me as I read out some assays here, but the standout came from Kopsa North, where Nordic hit 71 meters at 2.9 grams per ton gold and 0.13% copper. And that included 8.4 meters at just over 20 grams per ton gold and a single 1.2 meter assay at 105.5 grams per ton gold. And those are the sort of numbers that really start to grab attention. They all come in at more than 100 gram meters. And I think as a general rule of thumb, that's when things start to get really interesting. But as good as that, like, high grade hit is, I think the more important point is the pattern emerging here, because Nordic has been stepping out around Kopsa and repeatedly finding mineralization beyond that resource model, like I said. In the southwest, for example, the company drilled its furthest step outs yet, with holes collared to 90 to 160 meters beyond previous drilling, and each hole returned more than 100 meters of semi-continuous mineralization. So it all suggests Kopsa may be materially larger than the current resource implies. I think Rob Rickson, the MD, put it quite simply and effectively in your recent interview of him, Mark. They still don't know how big Kopsa is going to end up being. And that's really the opportunity here. It could be huge. So Kopsa is already the main asset, but the next resource update could show it becoming a much more serious development project. So there's also then Kamala Trend. This sits around 40 kilometers north of Kopsa and gives Nordic a second leg to the story. The Angers Neva deposit already hosts 147,000 ounces of gold in the indicated category, so quite high confidence. Recent drilling there returned wide gold, copper, silver intersections, including 70 meters at 1.34 grams per ton gold, as well as some copper and silver. And that again was outside the existing resource. And nearby Vesipera, a new target, is also starting to look interesting. Nordic's first 2026 drilling there returns strong gold intersections in all six holes, and the company is now assessing whether recent and historic drilling could support another maiden JORC resource. So again, this is not just about one hole or one deposit. It's about whether Nordic can keep adding ounces across this wider Finnish portfolio. And that brings us to the current catalyst. Nordic has now started a new 12,000 meter diamond drilling program for the second half of the year. That program will more than double the meters the company has drilled across its assets to date, with work planned primarily at Kopsa and Kamala, with a possible extension drilling to a third project, depending on progress. So basically, they'll see how it goes, and they might move on to that Hersik Angus project if they feel it's appropriate. So the company's also expecting metallurgical results from Kopsa, an updated Kopsa resource, like I mentioned, that updated Angers Neva resource, and potentially the maiden Vesipera resource. So there should be steady news flow throughout the rest of the year with all of those milestones and the drilling ongoing. And importantly, Nordic finished the June quarter with 8.48 million Aussie dollars in cash. So it has money to pursue all of this work. You know, as I always say with these companies, it's still an exploration development story. The updated resource needs to land, resources, I should say, metallurgy needs to support the development case at COPSA and further studies will be needed before anyone can properly assess a mine plan. But I think the attraction is really clear here. Nordic already has 1.23 million ounces gold equivalent, got a flagship deposit that appears to be growing, additional near surface resources at Kamala and that third project. It's got a strong jurisdiction, and now it's got a major drill program underway. So if the next few months confirm the scale and continuity of the portfolio, Nordic could start looking, you know, less like a modestly valued explorer and more like an emerging regional gold developer in Finland. So I think it's definitely worth looking at before those results potentially put it on the radar of many more investors.
Yeah, I think you're right. And it's a good time to be getting involved because they've got, is it 1.2 million ounces in total, I think, over all the projects. But the main one has got 800,000. And I keep sort of asking him, where do you think it's going to go? We've got a path to a million. And then he's not said that, but I would sort of expect to be over a million, certainly on their main project there. So a million is a good number to be. I was always told you don't want to be looking at, you know, anything serious. Obviously, you can speculate on exploration stocks, but for any kind of sort of semi-serious gold play, don't look at anything less than a million ounces. And then your real commodity investors like you, Willem Middelkoops, for example, of the Discovery Commodity Fund, he really wants to get to 5 million, or he wants to see it's at least a path to 5 million. So, I sort of use that as a bit of a benchmark for like larger scale. As I say, it's different if you're doing real small, well, not necessarily small, but just exploration stage, discovery stage, and really trying to get that that moment when something is found. But if we're talking about, you know, the next sort of Greatland Gold, for example, then, you know, yeah, it's a good benchmark to go with, I think. I mentioned that I thought this that Nordic was similar to Barton Gold. Obviously, right. Barton Gold is in Australia, but it's just similar in terms of sort of ounces and the multiple deposits and the hub and spoke idea and the mill. And he actually agreed with me. He said that it's actually quite a good comparison. So I actually want to get up there at some point and have a look at the project.
Absolutely. And then when you talk about that 1 million ounce benchmark, then potentially the pathway to 5 million, I wouldn't want to say that's definitely going to happen at COPSA.
Yeah.
It's already at 800,000. And I think that pathway, if they're repeatedly finding gold way outside of this resource pit, it certainly looks good at this stage, doesn't it? The drill results will obviously be the catalyst that will tell us if there's anything to that. But I think, you know, you can only speculate at this point and on the information that you've got. And it certainly looks encouraging. Yeah.
It does. I like it. Sometimes you just get a nice feel for a company. And from talking to Rob, I just get a nice feel for it. I also hopefully meet him in November in person at the SMI. Nice to meet him in person. Excellent. Well, thank you, Dan. So we can look out for the newsletter from Stopbox this week on Nordic. So, Alan, let's talk about Mendel Helium and what they're up to, which is doing quite well, I think, as well this week.
It's had a very strong week indeed, Mark. And of course, Mendel Helium have completed or recently completed the move from Aquis to the AIM market. I was there at the celebration events where at the London Stock Exchange, and good to see and meet up with the team there. But they've got a very exciting future. Shares are pushing higher. I'm going to come to the operational update that was provided by CEO Nick Tulloch and his team shortly. But just look at the overall investment case at the moment. So Mendel's currently trading at just over 5p. It's got a market cap of 17 million. It's very undervalued compared to its peer group, and I'm going to look at the whys and wherefores of that, because I think it should be well ahead of where it is now, and I'll come to that in a second. But the company is focused on developing a major helium field in Kansas in the USA. Now, helium, of course, is known as the disappearing element. It can't be produced synthetically, so supplies of helium are extremely important. The war against Iran, or between the USA and Iran, has created extra pressure on the price. Helium production facility in Qatar was shut down, and you can't just literally switch it off. There's a long process to shut the plant down, and equally there was a long process to restart the plant. So that has automatically created a supply squeeze. So the race is on to get helium produced and into the market. Now, Mendel's assets in Kansas are focused on Fort Dodge, which is the key area for the company, and also to a lesser degree, the Hugoton field as well, where the company, the company has three wells in Fort Dodge. Currently, it has a number of wells in Hugoton, which are already in production, but the decision has been made to focus on developing the assets in Fort Dodge. So the company's got two wells there, the Rost 1 well and the Rost 2 well. It also has the Broby saltwater well, and this is where the methodology employed by Mendel basically uses the water extraction, or the dewatering process in the wells, to release the gas. Now, the numbers are extremely impressive. A recent estimate for the Fort Dodge area estimated the area could contain P50 prospective resources of 5.3 billion cubic feet of helium, and that's just based on what's currently known. But also, the methodology employed by Mendel has created a lot of interest with regional operators. And indeed, the largest regional operator in Texas, Ritchie Exploration, and Mendel have a joint venture on two wells called the Schneeweiss wells, and those are being worked on too. So there are a number of wells being pushed towards development. But I think what's key for Mendel is that the company, compared to its peer group, it's about to go into production. And in a release earlier this week, the company provided an operational highlight, and I'll basically take you through the points that it made for each one. So the Broby disposal well, of course, using the dewatering process to extract the water, that water's got to go somewhere. So, of course, it's pumped into the Broby disposal well, and the company has a permit to pump up to 10,000 barrels per day, which provides plenty of scope for rapid production of helium from the Rost 1 and Rost wells. Now, the work at Rost has established that the well is very stable. The production methodology is ensuring that the gas release at the wellhead is stable, and the concentrations remain at, I have to say, a market-leading 5.1% helium. Now, commercial grades are normally considered to be in the region of 2%, so 5.1% is well over double that, and absolutely premium. So the Rost 2 well is also progressing. The company's consulting with the Halliburton engineering team and undergoing various engineering developments to that well. Back to the Broby saltwater well, that exceeded expectations during testing. So it seems that the company has ample scope to not only develop Rost 2, but also to develop other wells and drill other wells in the region and use Broby to deposit that salt water. So there's a real opportunity and a real sense that that we're going to see some more scale here. And Nick Tulloch said, following those upgrades to Broby and also the Rost 1 well, we're now poised to commence production from both wells, subject to completion of the utility connection. We expect dewatering operations at both Rost wells to commence by mid-August. Now, we're pretty well there. That's about 6 or 7 days away. So we are right on the cusp of what I believe will be a major inflection point in terms of value for the company. So, so the broker, Oak Securities, published a note on Mendel back in a few weeks back, 20th of July, just highlighted the company's relatively strong balance sheet. Of course, there was a placing in April, which raised $5 million, and it anticipates the company should have pro forma cash of over $7 million. That's going to allow it to fund the drilling campaign for those other wells. But of course, when production starts, it's going to be selling. Helium into the marketplace commercially, and that is huge exciting. Now, I have published on my Twitter feed the peer group valuation. Mendel's currently worth about 17 million sterling. Pulsar Helium is worth 152 million. Now, Pulsar Helium has the Topaz well, the Topaz well, which is its flagship project in Minnesota, also close to production as well, but the company is worth 152 million. We then have Helium One, which has announced its first sale under Helium offtake agreement. That's at the Galacta Pegasus Helium development in Colorado, and that's a 50% owned asset. Mendel owns 100% of the asset in Kansas, and then we have Helix Exploration. Helix Exploration is working through the Rudyard facility in Montana and working towards production there too. So all these companies are roughly at the same point. But Mendel is going to produce helium basically next week, so it's going to be selling that into the marketplace. Market cap comparison: Pulsar Helium 152 million, Helix Exploration 68 million, Helium One 39 million, Mendel 17 million. Now, at the very least, I think Mendel's market cap, given where it's at, should be double that. So, I mean, we're looking at a share price target, I think, of about 13 to 14 pence. But that's just my opinion. Don't take that as gospel, but that's where I believe the company should be. And I do believe that once the company starts to produce in the next few days, we're going to see rapid movement towards that level, and we're going to see the valuation gap closed.
So you're calling it for a 10 bagger, Alan?
Yeah, I believe so, because all of the I think you've got to look at the interest that the company's created in Kansas. So the engineers are backing it. They're buying into the wells with their own money. They're taking shares. They're happy to take shares because they know what's down there. The innovation and the methodology employed by Mendel has attracted some big players. And as I say, Ritchie Exploration is the biggest player in Kansas. They've now got the joint venture with Mendel on the Schneeweis wells.
Yeah, well, good. I mean, as you say, they've done quite well, haven't they? I mean, they're at 17 million now. I remember when they were a lot less than that, not too long ago.
Yeah.
And I just sort of keep saying the same thing. Nick Tulloch's doing what he says he's going to do,
yes.
Get into production.
Yeah.
Yeah, find more wells and make some cash.
Yeah,
for the company.
And I think also, the company appears to have shelved Hugoton, but there's huge potential there. There's also the Scout J-Hawk plant too, the helium processing plant. So I'm sure at some point, once they've really developed the Fort Dodge asset, they'll probably go back and look at Hugoton too.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, thank you, Alan. I know, Dan, you like Mendel as well. Don't you have a word on that before you talk us through Evolution?
Yeah, I do. I really like it. I think Nick's a great CEO there delivering, and it's good to see the company actually getting some recognition in the marketplace. I think Alan's right that it should be multiples of where it is now, and hopefully that production next week. I didn't realize it was so soon, actually, Alan. Hopefully that will be the catalyst. I mean, it has performed very well over the last few days, so we just want to see that continue, don't we?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Okay, well, take us to Australia then. Well, back to Australia. You're covering all the Australian ones today.
Yeah. So Evolution Energy Minerals is one of those small cap stories where there's quite a lot under the hood. The market cap is pretty small. It's around 6.6 million Aussie dollars. But underneath that, you've got two very significant and very different assets in Tanzania. One is Chilalo, which is a large advanced graphite development project, and the other is Kundo, which is an early stage copper project with drilling now getting very close. So it's not a graphite, just a graphite story. It's not just a copper explorer. It's a company with a defined development asset on one side and near-term exploration upside on the other. So I'm going to start with Chikundo because that's where the most obvious short-term catalyst sits. So Chikundo is a copper project in southern Tanzania. The company Evolution has done a lot of work over the past year to get it drill ready. That includes soil sampling. It's been reviewing historical data out in the field, making observations and ranking targets. The company now has defined four priority copper targets. The soil program combined around 1,500 new samples with around 600 historic ones. And independent interpretation confirmed the strongest anomalies are consistent with genuine hydrothermal copper mineralization rather than just background geology or weathering. So that's important because it shows Chikundo isn't just a vague copper idea, but it's a real system. So the priority target is the Chikundo prospect centered on the malachite pit area. That's where the company has visible copper minerals at surface, including malachite and azurite. I think these are pretty key pathfinder minerals in this space. And it also has Gossan development and alteration features that support the exploration model that Evolution is building. There's also additional targets at Nangarugai. Sorry, I've probably pronounced that wrong, Craig, if you're listening. Chikundo North and also Chikundo West. So the opportunity is not just one small target. There's potentially broader project scale exploration upside. So the latest news at Chikundo is that Tanzania's Mining Commission has approved Evolution's expression of interest for its maiden drill program. That clears the company to finalize the drill contract with one of three approved 100% Tanzanian-owned contractors. So we're now very close to the first drill test, and the planned program is 17 RC holes for around 3,350 meters with 9 priority holes and 8 optional follow-up holes. And in my interview last week, MD Craig Moulton made a useful point about what we might want to see from that, what success might look like. You know, everyone wants the big discovery hole, and that will be great if that happens. But realistically, at this stage, success, as I often say, is about showing scale and grade. If Evolution starts hitting decent copper mineralization across multiple holes, especially anything around that 2% plus copper level that Craig mentioned to me, then Chikundo could quickly become a much more serious part of the story. But even lower grade mineralization or strong pathfinder evidence could still help vector the company towards the main body. So I think this drill program, you know, there's a lot of potential outcomes. And I think, yeah, even if it's not those big headline intersections, it can still be an important development for the story that helps the company in informing future exploration and drill programs. So looking forward to seeing what comes out of that. So that's Chikundo. And yeah, it potentially offers very high leverage from a market cap of just 6.6 million. But there's also Chilalo, and this is a very different kind of asset. Chilalo is not early stage exploration. It's a large and very high quality flake graphite development project next to Chikundo in Tanzania, supported by a completed DFS, a completed FEED study, metallurgical test work, and downstream engagement with potential end users. So the company is now progressing a staged modular startup strategy with first graphite concentrate production targeted for October next year. So the latest Streams news is useful here. Streams, if you don't know, is a EU-backed battery materials program designed to reduce Europe's dependence on imported raw materials. And Evolution is the only graphite source in that program. So that means Chilalo is sitting inside a European supply chain initiative, not just as a concept, but as the primary natural graphite feedstock we've tested. And with regard to that feedstock testing, the first results have been very strong. Chilalo concentrate was purified from 95.7% target total graphite content to 99.99% carbon. And if you know, I asked Craig about this because I wasn't entirely sure about the concept here, and he explained why this is key in our interview. When he said that Chilalo's value is not just, you know, about one number, it's about the combination of purity and flake size. So Tanzanian graphite is known for being coarse, and when you combine that coarse flake profile with the ability to reach very high purity, you potentially open up a wider range of premium end markets. So that could include battery materials, but also things like graphite foils, refractory bricks for furnaces, fireproof cladding, and other high-end technology applications. So Chilalo gives Evolution a much bigger development story than the current market cap suggests. But we should be clear on what we're looking for here, because Chilalo is not like Chikundo. We're not waiting for one dramatic drill result or drill results at all, really. We're looking for execution evidence, more product validation, more streams progress, more customer of all offtake style interest, clarity on the plant, and also critically a sensible funding pathway, and the company's already making progress on that. So these are the key things we want to see at Chilalo. It's a real project, but real projects need money, approvals, and execution. Good news is Evolution finished June with around $3 million Aussie dollars in cash, and it says it's funded for its planned near-term exploration and early works. So it's always a good tick in the box. I think the just to sum up, the investment case here is pretty simple. Chikundo could give the market a near-term copper discovery catalyst. Chilalo gives the company a serious longer-term, not necessarily longer-term, but it's these things do take time, but it could give the company a serious graphite development asset. And right now, at around 6.6 million Aussie dollars, it doesn't feel like the market is giving Evolution much credit for either. So this is still speculative, of course. Chikundo needs to deliver through the drilling. Chilalo needs to keep moving towards execution. But if Evolution does get those eye-catching copper results at Chikundo and continues to show development progress at Chilalo, then I think the stock could start to look very different as it enters the radar of more people. And perhaps getting in before that happens might serve you well.
Excellent. Thank you, Dan. Yep, it's a good little story emerging out of Australia. So I know you keep very strong tabs on that. So it's thank you for talking to us about Evolution. Okay, so let's finish off then, Alan, with Trifast. And we've spoken about them before, but what's been going on, in your opinion?
Okay, so we did speak about Trifast, Mark. You're right, actually at the start of July, so about a month ago. So I wanted to cover them again because we spoke when the share price was 70p, today it's 82p, which for a company in this sector and you know of the nature of Trifast is quite something. And there's something going on behind the scenes, which I'll come to my thoughts on that later. But the company Trifast is a manufacturer of all these little bits and pieces. So you go into a DIY store, see all these little bags hanging up with the screws and brackets and goodness knows what else. That's the sort of thing Trifast do, and they're involved in pretty well every industrial sector: lighting, telecoms, computing, business machines, light vehicles, heavy vehicles. So it's a very broad spectrum, and on the back of that, of course, I'd say it's a good defensive stock. It also pays a small dividend too, which is of course attractive to a lot of investors. But the scope for growth, I think, has always been limited, and that's why we've seen a fairly modest share price performance. But something behind the scenes is changing. So I'll come to that in a second. But the company has recently consolidated its cost base. It was based just up the road from where I live in Uckfield in East Sussex. It's now moved its national distribution center to the West Midlands, and it's operating from there. The company's got operations all over the world, and it sells its products all over the world. On July the 2nd, it announced full-year results, revenues of $207 million, down slightly from previously, which reflected the strategic move to focus on revenue quality. So it's actually exited some markets, and it's focusing on quality revenues rather than revenues where it's either struggles to or markets it struggles to sell into, or the revenue quality is poor. So gross margins increased to 30% up from 28%. Underlying EBITDA grew also from to 16.3 million from 14.9, and the EBIT margin also grew too, 7.8% from 6.7%. So again, that focus on quality revenues is paying dividends. And indeed, the dividend increase of 1.9p from 1.8p. So the company's continuing with this process of refinement and slimming operations and refining operations. And indeed, the housebroker Zeus initiated coverage of the company. And it pointed out that the company's deliberate and increasingly successful pivot towards prioritizing quality of revenue is paying off. The gross margin is the engine of progress. Of course, gross margins or EBIT margins up from 7.8% to 7.8% from 6.7%. It's growing. Zeus says it's growing the business by shrinking the top line, which is a rare combination that points to the success of structural changes rather than cyclical changes. And in terms of valuation, Zeus, using peer group analysis and discounted cash flow forecasts for the industrial component sector, notes a median of 15.7 times price earnings. Trifast, on the other hand, trades on just 8.9% price earnings, and it's increased its price target from 70p, the previous 70p, to 104p. So that, of course, could account in some way for the increase in the share price. Meanwhile, behind the scenes, Nicholas Mills, he's been buying shares through his various investment vehicles over the years. Now, those investment vehicles include Harwood Capital Management, Rockwood Strategic, also in his own name too, and Oryx International Growth Fund. And announced on the 6th of July, but actually on the 2nd of July, the Harwood Group of Investment Vehicle increased its stake from 17.4% to 20.49%. Now, that's getting to the point where you've got to make a bid for the company. You know, if you're above 23%, you've got to basically make a move for the company. So it begs the question, you know, did Mr. Mills buy in because he knew about the ongoing growth, or did he buy on the back of the Zeus note? As of yet, we don't know. But you know, to see this sort of price movement from a company like Trifast is pleasing. It's unusual. And obviously the question is, will it push higher? Will it hit that Zeus price target of 104p? Is there a bid on the way, perhaps? Is there a bid on the way to take the company private, or is there a bid from another player in the sector? All speculation, do your own research, but I think it's important to take a look at or revisit this company and take a fresh look.
Okay. Well, yeah, it's interesting, Alan. It's good that you sort of bring that across people's radars, that something is perhaps going on there with buys, but also with the strategy there. So, and you said the revenue was, what, 207 million?
Yeah,
for the year.
207 million for the year. But, I think the focus also on that quality of revenue. Gross margins now 30% up from 28.3%. EBIT margin up to 7.8% from 6.7%. And Zeus said that's the engine of growth. You know, that's the important bit. And of course, underlying EBIT also up to 16.3 million from 14.9 million. And it pays a little dividend too. It's 1.9%. So it's not a huge divvy, but you know, a lot of the board have bought into the company too. And you often see this, you know, companies like Trifast, they've been around for years. They produce modest share price performance, and you know, the directors and shareholders hold on to the shares, and then all of a sudden it explodes into life. And there's something happening at the moment, I do have shares in Trifast, by the way, I'll put that out there. But I think there is something happening, and who knows.
Okay, well, we'll keep an eye on it. Thank you for highlighting it. Okay. Well, thank you both for your time today. Let's see you again what next week brings. We'll hopefully enjoy our weekends, a little bit cooler anyway than it has been, I think. And we'll see what next week brings with everything, but not expecting too much in this August holiday.
No, indeed. No. Have a great weekend, guys.
Cheers, thank guys.
You. Oh.
If you enjoyed this interview, then give us a thumbs up, a like, or a retweet. Subscribe to us on YouTube or follow us on Twitter and hit that notification bell to be the first to know when we release new content. There's loads of great content on our website too, across all our programs at stockboxmedia.com. Thank you for watching.